This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, November 29th, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. Hope your Thanksgiving holiday went well. The 88th General Assembly of the Arkansas Legislature will convene in just over 40 days. The 2011 session will include more Republicans in the State House and more Republicans in the State Senate than any time since Reconstruction. And taxes, the lottery, prisons, and a legislative resignation will likely make headlines in the opening days and weeks of the 88th Assembly. This weekend, Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net asked Andrew DeMillo, the Capitol Bureau correspondent for the Associated Press in Little Rock, about the upcoming legislative session.
Let's begin with Governor Mike Beebe. He offers an hour-long talk this week on AETN, talks a lot about taxes and strains on the state budget. Is he going to have his hands full in this next legislative session protecting some of this sacred ground, or does he charm these headstrong legislators who want all these tax cuts into seeing things his way?
Well, he's definitely going to have a more challenging session than he's ever had before. His first term, he's been able to, even though he's had a little bit of a fight on some issues, he's been able to get mostly just about everything he's wanted out of the legislature. This time around, he's going to be dealing with a legislature where Democrats still hold a majority, but Republicans will have their largest numbers since Reconstruction. And also, he's going to be fighting with them a little bit more on tax cuts. His focus is still on reducing the sales tax on groceries. Republicans, however, want to see if there's room for other tax cuts as well. And Beebe, in his balanced budget proposal, has said that there's no room for any other tax cuts other than the grocery tax. So that's going to be one of the main areas where you're going to see kind of give and take between them right now.
Well, Beebe stopped short of saying it this bluntly, but he basically said in that interview, no new taxes. And that kind of kills a legislative solution to Sheffield Nelson's severance tax hike idea that he's been floating again. It also kind of puts the brakes on a blue ribbon highway panel's plans for meeting road needs. Let's take the severance tax first. Does Sheffield Nelson go the initiative route and try to get a popular vote on this?
It sounds like that's the option that he may hold out for. Sheffield Nelson, this is very similar to what he did 2 years ago. You know, he was really the one who got the ball rolling on the severance tax increase 2 years ago and basically had put out his idea and basically was able to be kind of the bad cop to Beebe's good cop. He had the 7% proposal with no exemptions that really rankled the natural gas industry, and that really gave Beebe leverage to be able to negotiate with the natural gas companies and say, well, if you don't like this idea, let's work out an idea that works out better. And that's how we got the current rate now, the 5% with some exemptions. He says he's going to start shopping the idea of the 7% tax on natural gas to legislators and see if there's any support for it. But he says that if there's not, he may go the initiated act route again. And it sounds like, this time around, Beebe, given the fact that he's basically said he doesn't really see this being the environment for tax increases, I don't really think they're going to be working in tandem the same way that you saw 2 years ago.
Sheffield Nelson's certainly been in the headlines lately, not only for that severance tax hike, but also he's been stirring up matters with the Game and Fish Commission, which he used to sit on. What do you think is driving all of this from him?
It's hard to tell. Sheffield Nelson is definitely someone who, in political circles, he's a household name. The severance tax, you never really got a sense of exactly why he wanted to do it, kind of what the vested interest was in it. For some reason, has decided to be very outspoken about it. Game and Fish Commission, is something that he has a history with, and it's really turned into a very personal and very kind of heated battle between him and the current leadership at Game and Fish Commission. That may seep into the legislative session next year, where you're going to see legislators really looking at the Game and Fish Commission, looking at their independence. And Sheffield really raising his conflict with the commission is really going to keep that at the forefront during the session.
All right, back on highways. Is the no tax sentiment from the governor and pretty much everywhere else, the legislators and everyone, going to make people question why they even put that blue ribbon panel together in the first place?
I think you may see that from some legislators, especially when they look at the price tag of what it costs to have this commission put together. The meetings that they did, the contracts that they had, John Paul Capps, the chairman of the commission, of the committee basically said that even if there's not any action taken next year, this is still a roadmap and still gives some idea of what to do in the future. The one idea among the proposals that they had that may get the most traction, or at least may not be dead on arrival, is the idea of the constitutional amendment for a bond program, basically taking the issue to the voters. Basically, there are a lot of legislators who may not be willing to vote for a tax increase, but may be willing to at least refer the matter to voters and say to them, if you want better highways, are you willing to pay for it? We're not hearing folks say as adamantly no to that as we are to some of the other tax increase proposals. So that may be the idea that may have the most legs out of this recommendation.
Well, now, no new taxes is going to play into this, too. There's a proposal floating between business and labor to raise an employment tax, actually a tax on employers, to cover unfunded unemployment benefits and federal government debt. All of this brought about by higher unemployment that we've seen for about 2 years, a little bit longer. The governor's words have got to kill that pursuit, don't you think?
The governor has said he's hopeful that the business leaders and labor can find some kind of compromise together. And he says he wants to see this addressed in the session, because if the state doesn't address it, then the feds they'll address it on their own. And he said he'd rather have the state basically be the master of its own fate. Part of the problem, though, is figuring out which side is willing to give more. State Chamber of Commerce has proposed something that would effectively raise taxes on businesses to go into the unemployment trust fund, but also cut unemployment benefits. Labor leaders, the AFL-CIO, has said that they're fine with the taxes going up for businesses, but they don't really see this as being the right time to cut benefits for unemployment. They said that they're willing to look at other changes to benefits, but cutting benefits is not one of them.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. Next subject, Representative Rick Saunders says he'll leave the District 24 seat when his term expires in early January. That's going to clear the way for a special election to be called. This has been kind of a political hot potato for a couple of weeks now. All sides, Saunders, the governor, Democrats, Republicans, they seem pretty satisfied with his decision. Were you surprised by the outcome?
Not necessarily a surprise, but there was a little bit of suspense, a little bit of hand-wringing over how this would be done. Saunders basically was in a position where if he had wanted to stay through 2012, the Attorney General had said legally he'd be able to do that. There were Republicans and there were others who said that there'd be a problem with that. They basically saw that as an end run around term limits, letting him stay in office that much longer. The flip side was that Saunders was worried that District 24 would be without representation during the legislative session next year. Saunders, as you said yesterday, announced that he will resign the first week of January. He won't sit in the 88th General Assembly. But one of the issues now is how quickly can a special election be called? There's a good chance that District 24 will not have a representative for most, if not all, of the legislative session. And that was one of the factors that went into his decision, one of the concerns that he had, and one of the reasons why he had been deliberating on it.
Let's turn to the lottery. The lottery's administrators have kind of taken their lumps in the past week. A very damaging audit report showed some loose internal controls, not following some state procedures, some expenses that were a little bit out of line. The governor's indicated that he is frustrated with lottery management. Stopped not far short of calling for Director Ernie Pasley's dismissal, as a matter of fact. What's your take on all this lottery business and how it's playing out?
Well, it's a very difficult position that the lottery is in and that Ernie Pasley is in. Because on the one hand, Pasley can point to a lot of successes that the lottery has had. They've raised more than $113 million in money for college scholarships. He was able to get it up and running in what some people call a record amount of time. But on the other hand, there have been things like the legislative audit and the findings that was really scathing report. And there have been other missteps in the past, too, going back to the high pay that he and other top officials got when the lottery first started up. And it's getting to a point right now where everyone from the lottery commission to lawmakers to even Governor Beebe now, they're really having to ask themselves, are these successes worth the headaches that seem to come along with Pasley's leadership? And you've got some lawmakers and some commissioners saying, no, it's not worth it. Commissioner Joe White had said earlier this week that he's not at the point that he's ready to ask for Pasolet's resignation, but he said he's not ruling it out yet. You know, he said he doesn't have a lot of confidence in him. Another commissioner had said that he found the audit appalling. The chairwoman, Diane Lamberth, chairwoman of the Lottery Commission, has said that she doesn't think it warrants his termination. But she also went out of her way to, going before an oversight committee this week to say that they understand what the problems are and that they're going to address them, and that they realize they can't point to a learning curve anymore, that they have to, address these problems and show that they're tackling them quickly.
Okay, highways, tax cuts, prison overcrowding, just a few of the fun topics legislators and the governor are going to have to deal with this January. Which issue do you think dominates, and is there an issue that you think is being overlooked that kind of sneaks up on folks?
Yeah, I think tax cuts, I think, are going to end up being the dominant issue during this session. You look at 2 years ago, we were in a different economic climate. You still had lawmakers propose more than $850 million in tax cuts, exemptions, and credits. That number, could end up, seeming kind of minor compared to the tax cuts we may see proposed for this session. From Beebe's grocery tax cut to Ed Garner's proposal to cut the capital gains tax to proposals to cut the tax on used cars. I think there's going to be a lot of efforts to see what taxes can be cut, and from the governor's perspective, what would have to be cut in state government to pay for them. Issues that I don't think are getting as much attention right now. You mentioned prison overcrowding. It's getting some attention. We heard Governor Beebe talk about it last night. I think prisons and prison reform is really going to be an issue that we're going to see come up a lot more during the session next year. The prison population has doubled, I think, over the past 10 or 20 years. And, there's just not room, not enough money right now, and the state's going to have to figure out what to do with sentencing. Also, I think schools, school funding, school reform, we're still going to see that issue come up to some degree. Consolidation, I think we're going to see another attempt to go after, from some rural lawmakers to change the consolidation law. You've got a lot of lawmakers coming in who weren't here during Lakeview and who weren't here during the school funding fights who really want to take another look at it. And I think that's going to be an issue that's going to come up.
Andrew DeMillo is the Capitol correspondent for the Associated Press in Little Rock. He spoke with Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net this weekend. The 88th General Assembly of the Arkansas Legislature will be gaveled into session at noon Monday, January 10th. You can follow Roby's coverage of current events in Arkansas business and politics at TalkBusiness.net. And support for Roby Brock's coverage of Arkansas business and politics is provided by Hendricks College, a residential undergraduate liberal arts college. Learn more at hendricks.edu/odyssey. And the Little Rock National Airport at fly-lit.com, where travelers can book air, car, and hotel reservations online, track flights, and check the weather. Mobile phone access is also available at fly-lit.com/mobile. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at bankozarks.com. This is Ozarks at Large. A week from tonight, on the University of Arkansas Fort Smith campus, there will be a holiday concert. Nothing at all unusual about that. It will be early December. However, there is something a little bit different about this concert, which is part of the UAFS Season of Entertainment 30. There will be guest singers from Japan, and we mean live from Japan. The latest in technology will be able to merge choirs and musicians from Fort Smith and Tokyo. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Egnihotri-Madolkar has more.
As part of its 30th season of entertainment, University of Arkansas Fort Smith will be presenting a season's greetings concert on Monday, December 6th, featuring traditional holiday music by UA Fort Smith vocal and instrumental music students. However, this is no ordinary concert. Stacy Jones, Associate Vice Chancellor for Campus and Community Events at UA Fort Smith, tells us why.
What's different about it is last year we were using, the Aeron system that the colleges and universities in Arkansas are using. We had a group join us live in high definition from Bunkyo University in Tokyo performed for our audience as well. This year we're going to bring those kids back. They'll be performing, but what we're going to do differently this year is our students and our vocal jazz ensemble will be singing with them. And this is quite a technical feat when you consider about we have some students on stage that will be playing the music, and there'll be no dead time in terms of lapse time going back and forth between here and here in Japan. It's all in high definition. So it's, for us, that technology is kind of an exciting thing to do.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith has articulation agreements with Bunkyo University in Tokyo, Japan. As a result, the universities have been able to provide exchange opportunities to their students. The live participation of Japanese students is also a consequence of this partnership.
Of course, the culture is changing here as well as it is on a lot of campuses, but the interaction of our students with the students from Japan will be exciting. We'll have about, with all the elements of our music department performing, about 60 different students will be performing at that concert. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Students were excited about it last year and are just as excited about it this year as well, especially this year, to be singing back with them.
Stacy says about 1,500 people attended the concert last year and hopes the number will increase this year. The concert will be broadcast in real time in high definition without any time lapse. Of course, such an event requires immense coordination, so Stacy lists a number of things that will be on a checklist. One of them would be doing a line test this week to make sure things are running smoothly between Fort Smith and Tokyo.
On Sunday night before the concert, we'll be doing another live check, this time with the sound. You know, we'll be playing on stage, making sure they can hear us, and testing the sound back and forth. Now, I'm oversimplifying the process. This is going to involve several technicians, several hours worth of work to set all this up. But once that second sound check is done, we should be in good shape.
With a 15-hour time difference between Fort Smith and Tokyo, students here will start the concert at about 7:20 p.m., while students in Tokyo will be singing at 10:20 a.m. local time. So have the students from both countries rehearsed together?
No, their sound check on Sunday night will be their one and only rehearsal. They'll both be rehearsing independently. Our students that are singing on that particular number will be rehearsing here, and then the students in Japan are rehearsing separately.
Following the concert, the audience will assemble outside for lighting of the campus for the holiday season. There will also be sleigh rides for audience members through the campus.
Oh, well, yeah, it's really interesting. We call it a sleigh ride, but we're using golf carts. We decorate our golf carts up and take people on that night through rides through the lights on campus. A lot of fun. There's free hot chocolate. There'll be another program out on the campus of Green that night. So
the UA Fort Smith Season's Greetings concert will take place on December 6th at 7 p.m. at the Stubblefield Center and will be followed by official lighting of the campus. Admission to the event is free. For Ozarks at Large, this is Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, young artists' work on display along the trails in Fayetteville. Jacqueline Froelich has that story. And for this week's edition of Unlicensed Opinion with Christopher Spencer from OzarksUnbound.com, we take a break from the matters of city, state, and politics to talk a little bit about the business of entertainment.
I think that there's a certain, pride, at least among you know, the film critics I know about not ruining movies for people, you know.
Philip Martin of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the creator of the blog blooddirtandangels.com will join the regular Monday conversation to discuss the role of the critic in the digital age. That conversation ahead on Ozarks at Large. And it's time for the KUAF and Friends holiday giveaway. Thanks to our KUAF underwriters, it's our chance to give back to you. You could win a gift from Beeland Manor Bed and Breakfast, Penguin Ed's Barbecue, Walton Arts Center, Arcega's Espresso Cafe, and more. Details and registration available on the web at KUAF.com. The drawing will be held Thursday, December 16th, during classical music with P.J. Hrabowski. Just one entry per person. Thanks and good luck. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. One of the small pleasures of hiking or biking on the Fayetteville Urban Trail System is two special kiosks that display local children's artwork. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich visits one of the installations and brings us the story.
We're here on Skull Creek Trail, underneath the bridge for the railroad tracks. And just a little ways away is one of our new student art kiosks on the trail.
Chase Gibson, Recreation Superintendent for Fayetteville Park, stands near one of two art kiosks on the Fayetteville Town Trail. He's father of two, one newborn, the other a toddler, and is beginning to understand the importance of displaying tiny masterpieces. But he said the town mayor, Lionel Jordan, is responsible for the public art installation, facilitated by Parks and Rec Director Connie Edmondson.
We kind of had some meetings, and Connie met with the Arts Council, and there were some discussions. And then we came up with the idea that it would be neat if we did it, and we had it be children's artwork. So that kind of removes any of the sort of, you know, whose art goes up and who decides and those sorts of things. By making it kids' arts and doing it in conjunction with the schools, then it made it more of a fun project. So.
And to save taxpayer money, the kiosks were built by Parks and Rec staff.
Well, actually, we built these in-house. So Parks and Recreation, we just out of the budget we had, we bought the materials, and then some people on our parks maintenance staff actually built them and put them together. Yeah.
Gibson says the kiosks are somewhat unique when it comes to public trails.
It was original to us, and we thought it was kind of a neat idea. I'm not aware of anyone else that has this, but that's not to say that there aren't some cities somewhere in the United States that do.
So with tens of thousands of young artists living in Fayetteville, how does Gibson choose artworks to display?
Well, that's where we were smart. We passed that on to other entities. So the schools actually will decide. So there, for each, it's about a six-week segment. There are two schools. Each one is assigned a kiosk. So like this time it's Washington and Leverett are at the two kiosks, and then the art teachers or whoever at their school that so decides, and we've given them the freedom, whatever method they want to use, if they want to let the kids vote, or if they want to, however they want to set up a contest, or if they just want to choose someone that's been a really good student to reward them. So it's really kind of up to them, the parameters that they want to set, and each school can do it however they choose. So
this kiosk stands on a sharp curve beneath the railroad tracks and next to Skull Creek. It contains a large watercolor collage of multicolored stars created by Mrs. Beer's fourth grade class at Washington Elementary School. The blue, pink, yellow, green, and violet stars likely represent certain students and looks a little like a flag.
For the summer, when we first put these up in August, we had the Boys and Girls Club and Yvonne Richardson Center, and they just chose some art that had been worked on over the summer through their summer programs. Last month, we had the new school in St. Joe's with the two schools. So we were able to contact them pretty quickly and go ahead and get their stuff up. It's interesting to see the different, because the schools also have the option to choose. It's a 2x3 foot area, so they can put two or three things up in there. They can put one big piece up in there. There was some of the projects were more group oriented, like it might have three or four kids' names at the bottom that worked on something together, that kind of thing. So it's been interesting, from abstract to like a painting of a tree. So they've kind of been across the board, but we're looking forward to, you know, it's nice when we get them in at the office just to kind of see what the kids are doing. So.
And Gibson said limiting this to children's art was a really wise move.
You removed maybe some of the competition. If it was, you know, how do I get my art in there? How do I do this? How do I do that? So I think once you make it kids, then everyone's like, oh, that's so neat, and it's really a great program, and there's no sort of backlash that might occur from, you know, from the subjectiveness of art, and that some people might not like what we're displaying or that kind of thing. So by putting children's work up, then I think you remove maybe some of the negative things that can occur. So, but everyone's loved it so far, everyone we've talked to.
So the kiosks are changed out every 6 weeks in order to cycle through all area schools and clubs. A schedule of showings is in the works and will soon be posted on the City of Fayetteville Trails website.
My hope is that it becomes a really big deal for the schools and that the kids are really excited and they're like, wow, I can get my art hung up on the trail and everyone in town gets to see it. And so it's kind of, I hope that the schools kind of take it and run with it and make a big deal out of it. And, you know, all the kids can submit their art and then they have some kind of selection process and they make a big deal out of the kid that wins, that gets his artwork up here and get kids excited about doing art rather than just being able to take it home to mom and dad. Now you have a shot at it going up in a public place for 6 weeks and everybody in town and their name goes on it and their school name goes on it. And so they get a chance to, you know, be a semi-celebrity here in town. So
just up the trail from here, the city's completed its Frisco Trail connection, creating a fun bypass through the downtown area. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more or download a map of Fayetteville walking and biking trail systems, you can visit the website accessfayetteville.org.
Musician Billy Strayhorn was born on this date in 1915 in Dayton, Ohio. The American pianist and composer spent his entire career in collaboration with and as a manuinist to the composer and band leader Duke Ellington. Educated privately, Strayhorn applied to Ellington in 1938 for work as a lyricist, using his own composition Lush Life as a credential. In 1939, Ellington made his first recording of a Strayhorn composition. It was the first of many, including the highly popular Take the A Train and Chelsea Bridge, an excellent example of the composer's refined impressionistic style. Strayhorn was also an accomplished pianist who rarely did justice to his own talent. His work as a composer became so intertwined with Ellington's that it was said that eventually neither man was able to distinguish his own contributions to their joint work. Strayhorn worked on most of Ellington's major concert works and unquestionably exerted a great influence upon him. The 12th governor of Arkansas, William Reed Miller, died on this date in 1887. The Batesville native was the first Arkansas governor born in Arkansas, and as governor, Miller acted to preserve civil rights for African Americans and to advance the cause of public education. Granted an honorary degree in 1880 by Arkansas Industrial University, now the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, apparently the first granted to an Arkansas governor, he was known to have been outside the state only 4 times and only for short periods. Despite the length of his service, no collection of Miller papers exists, and he rarely corresponded with other politicians on the leading issues in his 4 decades of service. The first Army-Navy football game was played on this date in 1890, with Navy winning 24-0 at West Point, New York. This year's game is scheduled for December 11th at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Monday, November 29th, 2010. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin. She is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
You know, in a day or two, he's going to tell me it's December, and I'm going to run screaming and wailing from the studio.
But as of now, it's still November.
Thank goodness, because I haven't bought a Christmas present yet. Okay, tonight we have auditions for the Village Players Christmas play, The Selfish Elf.
Well, boy, if they're just now having auditions,
they got to get a move on that whole elf thing. 7 o'clock tonight at 3350 Pinnacle Hills Parkway, Suite 101 in Rogers.
All right.
You can find out more at 876-1481. Also, some things coming up. December 2nd and 3rd, the Madrigal Dinner with the Bentonville High School Chamber Choir.
Right.
7 o'clock, First Christian Church in Bentonville, $25 tickets. You can find out more at 696 696- 3554. Mm-hmm. December 2nd through 4th, The Day Room, a play presented by North Arkansas Drama. 7 o'clock December 2nd through 4th and 2 o'clock December 5th at the Lyric Theater in Harrison.
Okay.
December 3rd through 5th, one of my favorite things, the Block Street Holiday Art Sale in Fayetteville.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Featuring works by Don House, Marie DeMarucas, Susan Shore, Cindy Arcega, Faye Alter. 7 to 9 on December 3rd, which is Friday. Mm-hmm. 10 to 5 on December 4th and noon to 5 on December 5th at the Good Folk House in Fayetteville.
All locally made crafts and art and stuff.
Shop at home.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, November 29th. Most Mondays, I'm joined by Christopher Spencer, the creator and editor of the website OzarksUnbound.com, for conversations we call Unlicensed Opinion. This week, we invited Philip Martin, critic at large for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette newspaper, to join our discussion. He's also the driving force behind the website BloodDirtAndAngels.com. When we talked with Philip, he discussed the business of reviews, the role of the critic in the digital age, and we began the conversation talking about the bane of some spoilers. That is, details about an important plot twist in a movie, book, or TV show before a reader, viewer, or listener has had a chance to see or read the work.
What I try to do is I try to make every attempt not to ruin anything for, for a prospective viewer, and I understand that people are going to go to see this or see whatever, regardless of what I say about it, because I don't think reviews really, make up people's minds about it. Certainly aren't as powerful as TV advertising or trailers or anything like that. I think 90% of the time, people who are reading a review already know whether they're going to see the movie or not. But I try not to, I wouldn't tell you the end of The Crying Game now, I mean,
it's really?
Almost 20 years. Yeah, if I was writing about it, I might allude to it like the Secret or something, but I wouldn't see any need. Now, if you're writing about something like, Lost episodes, and I have a friend who does that for the Onion AV Club, maybe you do have to get into specific plot points, but generally, when I'm writing about a film, there's a lot I can talk about other than, then this happened and then that happened, And I'm sure that sometimes, I do talk about plot, and I'm sure sometimes I do say things that, maybe somebody wishes I hadn't, revealed. But, I'm really just trying to talk about the work in a way that, just say something interesting about it. I think that's the chief duty of a critic, is to find something interesting to say about the work being considered. So,
let's say you're writing a piece that includes discussion of Hamlet or Romeo and Juliet. Surely you feel okay with that.
Yeah, I think you could probably tell people that Hamlet's the one where everybody dies at the end. Or actually, so is Romeo and Juliet. Well, not everybody in Romeo and Juliet. But, I think you can see, I think that you can sort of assume that certain works, are in the collective conscious, and they sort of belong to this public domain where everybody who, if you don't know about them, you should, and it's not going to ruin the experience for somebody. I wouldn't think twice about, talking about the end of, To Kill a Mockingbird or something. And often, I will make jokes about spoiler alerts and stuff like that when things are so patently obvious.
Do you ever have, when you're reviewing something that's new, a plea from the distributor or the producer not to reveal something?
Yeah, that happens occasionally. I can't think of the last time it happened, but yeah, and usually I have no problem. I've never had any problem abiding by that. I think that, and I didn't review this, so I think Cloverfield, they ask, not to reveal exactly what happened. But I have no problem, with that sort of thing. It doesn't happen as often. My sense is it doesn't happen as often as it used to, it's happened two or three times in the past, decade or so.
Have you ever got any feedback from any of your readers that said, "Hey, Philip, why'd you do that?"
I cannot remember.
Sure.
Ever having someone say that I told them something they wish they didn't know. I do remember writing a column, and this was going back to the Crying Game, where I had a conversation with an editor here about whether I should tell people, or whether I should reveal something about it. And it wasn't the big surprise anyway. I think it was because I was writing about, I'd written a column. Here you go. I know what it was. I had written a column about gays, and that I had said something like, everybody knows gay people, even if they think they don't. And then I referenced Crying Game, and that was shortly after the movie came out. And I had an editor say, you really want to say that, because I people don't realize that the Crying Game, there ain't gay people in the Crying Game until. The big reveal. And that's the only time I can ever remember it being an issue for me. But then again, and you see how I write, I don't really write a lot about what happens in a movie. In a perfect world, what we'd do, guys, is we'd go back to the old James Agee type model where the reviews would come out 2 weeks after the movies came out and everybody would have seen the movie, and then we could write about it and sort of have a conversation about it,
Sort of like what Pauline Kael used to do.
Exactly. Like these longer, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 word reviews that, that bring in a lot of stuff, but I'm generally writing 800 and I'm writing longer than almost everybody in the country on a regular basis, and 800 to 1,000 words may be the limit I've got. And, frankly, I find it really easy to write about most movies without, getting any sort of dangerous area like that. Like I said, I'd just as soon people have seen the movie before they read the review. But I understand, the convention's not that way, and it's not practicable, So.
Well, let me ask you then, because so often your reviews run the day something comes out, or sometimes even before a movie has hit wide release and made it to your Arkansas readership,
That would happen a lot, I think, with you guys in Northwest Arkansas, yeah. Especially if you read the reviews online, because we will run them as soon.
So, because I understand what you're saying. You'd like to have this conversation where we can all come together,
sure.
But if you're writing for a readership. That even if it's a wide release movie, but your review is in the Friday movie section, most people haven't seen it yet. What do you think about then? You're trying to convey to the readers.
Well, I'm trying to give people enough information that they can make an informed decision about a film for themselves. And I'm also writing to an audience that has no intention at all of seeing the film, just likes to read movie reviews. And there are people like that. There are plenty of people I know that don't go to the movies, but read my reviews, or they pick up the film, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months down the line when it hits home video. And so I've got that two audiences in mind. First of all, I do want to provide enough information to people that are going to go see the film right away. And I also have in mind this sort of, secondary audience, which basically smart people who know about movies. And in Arkansas, we have for whatever reason, and you could do a show on this. For whatever reason, in Arkansas, we really do have a very considered audience for like art house and independent films, and we also have the usual fanboy types, people that are interested in the next big releases, and you can have a really vital conversation about movies here with. Smart people, and which is probably one of the reasons why my newspaper has a dedicated Friday movie style section. Most places don't have that anymore, and a lot of places don't have a critic at all anymore. I mean, the critic in Atlanta is Roger Ebert, you know. Hmm. So we're sort of in a weird, interesting place. Anybody in the media here probably recognizes that, because people pay more attention to stuff here than they do in other places, and that's great for somebody like me, you know, because but I think that, you know, with the way the environment is now, and home video is so prevalent, and everybody has cable, and everybody or at least has the option to seek these things out if they want to, I don't really feel so bad about writing about Finnish movies or Icelandic cinema, you know, because if you're interested in it, and there are people who are, you can find it and you can see it.
Well, I think the biggest source of spoilers, other than social media, because I know that if I haven't seen a show that I follow that could have developments, I will just not look at Facebook until I've seen that show. That, again, is on me. But the biggest source for things like cameos and certain twists tends to be the trailers for movies themselves.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
certainly the funniest parts of the movie are oftentimes used in the trailers and ruin it for the rest of the movie.
Now, I think I'm going to reveal something here. But, of course, Mike Tyson is in The Hangover.
Right.
If I had not known that before I saw the movie, I think it would have been far more exciting, far more jarring, far more funny. But I found myself laughing and thinking, as entertaining as this movie might be, okay, now when does Tyson come?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
and
there's a marketing tool, because more people might go see it because they want to see how they use Mike Tyson. But trailers are horrible about spoiling details.
Trailers are really interesting, because usually they're put together by people who have absolutely no idea what the movie is about exactly. They just have, you know, they just get, you know, dailies sent to them, and they assemble it from these, you know, they assemble it out of context. And that's why you often find things in trailers that don't, you know, appear in the film, too, you know. And it's very rare that a trailer, that a director will have anything to do with the trailer for his film, which I think is just amazing. But you're right. They basically tell you the whole story sometimes, you know, and reveal all the surprises and most of the good jokes.
All right.
Fantastic. Really good talking with you again.
You too. All right. Take care, guys.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Chris, Kyle. Bye.
Philip Martin is a critic for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can also read his takes on entertainment, culture, and society at the blog blooddirtandangels.com. There's more from our conversation, including a guide to when it's appropriate to reveal that plot twist from a movie, book, or even an opera, online at ozarksatlarge.com. And after this brief break, Christopher Spencer from ozarksunbound.com will be back for our weekly plug or predict segment. We continue now with our conversation on this Monday, November 29th. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me from Ozarks Unbound is Christopher Spencer. Welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome to you.
This is plug or predict time.
Yes, the time at the end of the show where we make a decision about whether we want to push something or we want to make some sort of prognostication about what we think is going to happen.
And I feel bad because I haven't made a prediction now for a couple of weeks, and I'm not going to this time.
Kyle, I've only made one prediction so far, and we don't even know whether it's going to come true or has come true yet.
So my prediction is I will have a prediction next week, but my plug...
That's not your prediction.
No, no, no.
Okay.
My plug is Thursday
that's
night...
That's weak sauce.
That is. Thursday night in Fayetteville at the Good Folk House, run by Mike Shirky, who also does the Pick and Post Saturday nights in KUAF, the Waymores. Someone you might not have heard of, but it's Tom Kimmel, Don Henry, and Sally Barris, three great singer-songwriters on their own. They occasionally come together as the Waymores. If you like Americana, if you like clever and smart lyrics and great playing, I would suggest the Waymores Thursday night. They've had songs covered by Ray Charles, Johnny Cash, Joe Cocker.
August Company.
Yes. So anyway, the Waymores, it's a rare chance to see them in Fayetteville Thursday night at Good Folk House on Block Street. Goodfolk.org for more.
Well, so I thought I would actually plug something thematically appropriate to our last segment, and that is a video that I uncovered as I was doing research on this topic of spoilers. It's a group called the Fine Brothers. It's just two guys.
F-I-N-E.
S-F-I-N-E. Sitting in front of a camera. This one is 100 movie spoilers in 5 minutes. And literally, they go through, they got the clock, the countdown clock, and they're busting out just the end of movies. They have a whole series. They have movie spoilers, Oscar edition per year. They've got 50 Disney movie spoilers. Anyway, I'm probably going to link to it on my post on Ozarks Unbound.
Christopher, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
You can read about Ozarks events, culture, and more at OzarksUnbound.com.
We know lots of people hate the new airport screening procedures.
There's no way that I'm going to submit my family to this nonsense.
But we also have to keep air travel safe, so are there better options? I'm Neil Conan. Can we screen better? Plus the opinion page. Join guest host Tony Cox next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation, this and every weekday afternoon from 1 until 3, right after Ozarks at Large. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the family of philanthropists at Arkansas Community Foundation who say, Happy Holidays. This foundation makes grants to improve the quality of life in our state and collaborates with individuals, families, and organizations to build local communities through philanthropy. Arkansas Community Foundation, for good, for Arkansas, forever. 372-1116 or arcf.org for more information. The Ozark Poets and Writers Collective will host poet Ashley McHugh tomorrow night at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. The program will begin at 7 p.m. and includes an open microphone for poems. It's free. For more information, 571-2550 or online, ozarkwriters.wordpress.com. And this reminder, it's time for the KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway. Thanks to our KUAF underwriters, it's our chance to give back to you. You could win a gift from Trailside Cafe and Tea Room, the University of Arkansas Bookstore, Dog Party USA, or Arkansas Yoga Center, or several other underwriters. Details and registration available on the web at KUAF.com. The drawing will be held Thursday, December 16th during Classical Music with P.J. Hrabowski. Please, just one entry per person. Thanks and good luck. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Bentonville, a service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. And remember, you can listen at our website, KUAF.com. You can hear individual stories or entire episodes of Ozarks at Large at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at noon with another new edition of Ozarks at Large. And to hear classical music 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, KUAF HD2. Available for free on your HD radio or online at KUAF.com.